Today is Friday, November 28th, and you are listening to the World Socialist Website. European governments oppose any negotiated settlement to Ukraine war. By Peter Schwartz. US President Donald Trump's attempt to negotiate a settlement of the US-NATO war with Russia by striking a deal with Moscow has met with fierce resistance in Europe and is destroying the transatlantic alliance with the US. The days when the US was considered a partner are irrevocably over. Trump has finally ruined America's reputation as a reliable and reasonable ally, wrote Berthold Koller, editor of the German daily FAZ. The fact that Kiev now has to kowtow to Trump is the punishment for having been grossly negligent in ensuring its own security by making itself dependent on an unreliable partner. French President Macron was right in calling for strategic autonomy, which must now be pursued much more consistently. There is agreement on this in the most important European capitals. But the pursuit of strategic autonomy, the building of armed forces that are equal to the formidable American military machine, and capable of continuing the war against Russia, is incompatible with the social conditions that have long dampened class antagonisms in Europe. It puts fierce class struggles on the order of the day. Strategic autonomy requires the transfer of gigantic sums from social to military budgets, the destruction of hundreds of thousands of jobs in the international trade war, and the reintroduction of conscription. Parents must once again prepare to lose their children, as French Army Chief Mandon recently said. In short, strategic autonomy requires the Trumpization of Europe. Leon Trotsky wrote in the 1920s, American capitalism, in driving Europe more and more into a blind alley, will automatically drive her onto the road of revolution. And this is the most important key to the world situation. And he warned, in the period of crisis, the hegemony of the United States will operate more completely, more openly, and more ruthlessly than in the period of boom. The Wall Street crash of 1929 did indeed plunge Europe into a revolutionary crisis, as Trotsky had predicted. But the working class was defeated first in Germany, then in France and Spain, because the social democratic and Stalinist mass parties proved incapable of providing revolutionary leadership. The result was the catastrophe of World War II. After the war, the United States rescued European capitalism, which had been completely discredited. At that time, the German bourgeoisie sat covered in blood from head to toe on the ruins of the war it had instigated. The bourgeoisie of Italy and France had collaborated closely with the Nazis. There was a widespread conviction among the working class that capitalism had failed and had to be abolished. Two factors prevented the overthrow of European capitalism. The first was the Stalinist bureaucracy in Moscow, which used its influence over the communist parties to nip any revolutionary initiative in the bud. The second was the US, which needed Western Europe as a bulwark in the Cold War against the Soviet Union, and as a market for its products, and helped European capitalism back on its feet with the Marshall Plan. Today, the US is not a stabilizing factor in world politics, but the greatest destabilizing factor. The richest country in the world has become the most indebted. American imperialism is trying to extricate itself from its crisis by imposing punitive tariffs on opponents and allies, threatening them militarily, and declaring war on its own working class. This did not begin with Trump, but with Ronald Reagan. It continued under Democratic and Republican successors, and has reached a new dimension with Trump. The crisis of US imperialism is not only driving American, but also European, society towards a revolutionary confrontation. As Trotsky wrote 100 years ago, American capitalism is revolutionizing overripe Europe. The social mechanisms and political institutions that restrained the class struggle in the past are collapsing under the pressure of American punitive tariffs, the profit demands of the financial markets, and the enormous costs of rearmament. Good education, adequate health care, higher wages, and secure pensions are things of the past. Reformist unions and parties have turned themselves into stooges of capital. Pseudo-left parties such as Syriza in Greece, Podemos in Spain, the Left Party in Germany, and Mamdani in New York fall into line as soon as they are elected to government office. The bankruptcy of the social reformist parties has allowed right-wing demagogues to capitalize on growing discontent. But that is beginning to change. The mass protests against Macron's pension reforms in France, the large demonstrations against the Gaza genocide in Britain and Spain, and the current general strikes in Belgium, Italy, and Portugal demonstrate this. This movement does not yet have a revolutionary character. It is dominated by traditional trade unions, syndicalist grassroots unions, and pseudo-left groups. It remains stuck in the illusion that pressure can force the ruling class to change course. But workers and young people are learning fast. The failure of protest politics makes them receptive to a revolutionary, socialist perspective, if it is systematically fought for. For European, and especially German, imperialism, the war against Russia is a key strategic issue. As long as the European imperialists have the world's largest nuclear arsenal at their backs, it is difficult for them to pursue their global imperialist ambitions. Russia also has valuable raw materials. Hitler had already declared the conquest of living space in the East to be his most important foreign policy goal. The war also serves domestic political purposes, the militarization of the entire society in preparation for fierce class struggles. But even the most hawkish figures agree that without American support, the war against Russia cannot be continued, let alone won, at least not in the next 3 to 5 years. Hence the bitterness over American betrayal and the pace at which European rearmament is being pushed forward. The conflict with the US is not welding Europe together, but exacerbating rivalries between the European powers. The reconciliation between the arch-enemies, Germany and France, which fought 3 costly wars against each other within 75 years, was less due to the insight of Adenauer and de Gaulle than to pressure from the US. Today, Paris and Berlin agree on rearmament and continuing the war against Russia, but neither wants to cede leadership in Europe to the other. A deal between Putin and Trump would not end the Ukraine conflict. It would only be another step on the road to a third world war. Real peace can only be achieved through the independent intervention of the international working class to put a stop to all warmongers. The struggle against layoffs, wage and social cuts, the defence of democratic rights, and the fight against war are inseparably linked. Workers must abandon the illusion that moral appeals or political pressure can dissuade the ruling class from its course. It is impossible to seriously fight against war without putting an end to the dictatorship of finance capital and the capitalist economic system, which is the root cause of militarism and war. This requires a complete break with all parties and organisations that defend capitalism and the building of a party that unites the working class of all countries and nationalities in the struggle for a socialist society. The Socialist Equality Parties and the International Committee of the Fourth International. Death toll in Hong Kong fire rises to 94. Hundreds still missing. By Eric Long. The fire that destroyed 7 high-rise residential buildings in Hong Kong is nearly extinguished, after burning for more than 36 hours. At 9 a.m. Hong Kong time, the fire department announced that 94 people had died and 76 were injured. Those numbers will only continue to rise. The number of missing has not been updated by authorities in 24 hours and still stands at 279. It is now the worst fire in Hong Kong's history since a warehouse fire in 1948 killed 176 people. The Wang Fuk Court apartment complex in Tai Po caught fire in the mid-afternoon on Wednesday. The complex was under renovation. Like so much of the rest of Hong Kong, its buildings were encased in bamboo scaffolding and green mesh netting. The immediate cause of the fire has not yet been uncovered, but once it began, it tore through the scaffolding and netting that surrounded the structures at breathtaking speed, engulfing 7 towers in the conflagration. Surviving residents report that fire alarms did not go off. The windows were encased in highly flammable styrofoam. An elderly survivor told the press that his home had been entirely dark, the windows covered from the outside with styrofoam. He had glimpsed the fire through a chink in the styrofoam covering his bathroom window and managed to evacuate. Others would not have seen the fire at all. Prestige Construction and Engineering Company, the firm in charge of building maintenance at the estate, appears to have used illegal, unregulated materials, including styrofoam and flammable mesh. The Hong Kong Labour Department only keeps a record of the past 2 years' infractions by companies on its website, but even in this limited window, Prestige was convicted of 2 safety offences on other construction sites in November 2023. They were operating 11 ongoing construction projects at residential estates. Police arrested 2 company directors and 1 consultant from Prestige Construction on suspicion of manslaughter. They seized bidding documents, a list of employees and computers and mobile phones during a raid on the construction company's offices. Flame-resistant mesh costs 90 Hong Kong dollars per sheet. Flammable mesh, illegal on any building over 4 stories, costs 50 Hong Kong dollars. It is probable that illegal cost-cutting measures designed to save 40 Hong Kong dollars, which is about US$4.50 per sheet, rapidly spread the fire through 7 of the 8 Wang Fuk towers. Residents report that they repeatedly complained of infractions. They also allege that Prestige was awarded the contract despite making the least competitive bid, which strongly indicates wider corruption and collusion. The Labour Department reported that they had warned Prestige of fire hazards at Wang Fuk Court a week before the blaze. On 3 occasions, warnings of labour safety violations were issued since July last year. This begs the question, why was nothing done? What is the significance of repeated government warnings if, when no changes are made, the only outcome is additional warnings? While details remain murky, it is clear that there was, at a minimum, a great deal of government laxity in corporate oversight and regulation, if not outright complicity in the violations. Tai Po, located in the northern New Territories of the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region, is a predominantly working-class and lower-income community, with over 320,000 residents. Many of these residents live in government-subsidised housing estates, such as that of Wang Fuk Court. The dead are disproportionately the elderly and the very young. A 2021 government census revealed that of the 4,600 residents of the complex, around 40% were over the age of 65. On an ordinary day, the elderly can be seen congregating in the park, playing mahjong in the shade, and gathering for morning tai chi. Old women care for their grandchildren, old men fish in the nearby Lam Suen River. According to real estate listings, the average size of the floor area of the nearly 2,000 units in the complex, which was constructed in 1983, is 420 to 480 square feet, or 39 to 44 square metres. These are multi-generational homes. Many house a married couple, whose joint income supports everyone, the grandparents and the children. The grandparents care for the very young until they are old enough to go to school, while both parents are at work. When the senior members of the home are no longer able to sustain this role, a maid, Filipino or Indonesian, is often hired to live in the home, caring for the elderly and infants. The time of the outbreak of the fire means that most of those trapped in the units were grandparents and toddlers. The Hong Kong News carried the heartrending footage yesterday of a working mother learning that her elderly mother-in-law and infant daughter were dead. At least one Filipino and two Indonesian maids died in the fire. At least eight migrant workers are still missing, according to the Asian Migrants Coordinating Body. The actual numbers are doubtless higher. Facebook posts among the domestic worker community contain appeals to locate those who are missing, along with the infants for whom they cared. Scores of domestic workers are reported as having survived, according to their consulates, and are now in evacuation shelters. Their visas are contingent upon employment, and they will almost certainly be sent home by the Hong Kong government. Over 1,000 residents now reside in evacuation centres, in emergency shelters, sleeping on the floor. Many are still frantically inquiring after missing loved ones. There has been an outpouring of support from ordinary people throughout Hong Kong, supplying donations and coordinating aid. Government aid to the victims has so far been paltry, bordering on insulting. City Chief Executive John Lee Ka-Chiu pledged that the government would create a $300 million Hong Kong dollars, that is $39 million US dollars, fund to assist the victims, including a cash handout of 10,000 Hong Kong dollars to each household. That is the equivalent of 1 month's rent for a 300 square foot unit. To move into a unit in Hong Kong requires paying first and last month's rent, a 1 month security deposit, and half a month's rent to the realtor, 3.5 times the amount of aid the government is offering. Each family of victims, Lee added, would be assigned a caseworker and would be provided with 2 weeks accommodation in a hostel or hotel. The victims have not only lost loved ones, they have lost everything they owned. They wear hand-me-down clothing supplied by community donations, and all the Hong Kong government is giving them is 2 weeks accommodation and a month's rent. The housing crisis is one of the defining social features of Hong Kong, which is consistently one of the most expensive cities in the world. 7.5 million people live in about 80 square kilometres of housing. The hourly minimum wage in Hong Kong is 42.1 Hong Kong dollars per hour, having gone up just 2.1 Hong Kong dollars in 2025, a rise of about 27 US cents. The housing crisis in Hong Kong is not the product of overpopulation, but of extreme inequality and real estate speculation. Hong Kong is home to a significant segment of the world's mega-rich. The rich live in multi-story homes, sometimes even entire medium-rise buildings dedicated to a single family. A single wealthy family may employ 20 or 30 domestic workers, drivers, nannies, cooks, a crew for the yacht. They live on the Peak or the Finance District of Central. They shop for Gucci and Prada in the malls of Tsim Sha Tsui, the most expensive real estate in the world. Maserati and Lamborghini sports cars are not an uncommon sight on the streets of Hong Kong, a city with a highly efficient public mass transit system, where it is difficult to ever drive more than 60 kilometres an hour. Meanwhile, 220,000 people live in rented spaces, known as cage homes, that are smaller than the standard Hong Kong parking space. The number of such subdivided units is growing, particularly in older, working-class neighbourhoods like Sham Shui Po. A small electric fan and a rice cooker at the foot of the bed, stacks of neatly folded clothes, and other slight mounds of possessions sit atop the sheets in windowless rooms. Each bed space is enclosed in a cage that can be locked when the resident is away from home. The average wait time for public rental housing in Hong Kong is 5.5 years. The wait time is growing longer, not shorter. People plan their lives around the application process. Young people delay marriage. Unhappy couples avoid divorce. The system of public housing in Hong Kong began after another catastrophic fire in the slums of Shek Kip Mee on Christmas Day in 1953 that left 53,000 people homeless. Needing to shelter the working population and feeling the ideological and political pressure of the victorious Chinese Revolution just across the border, the British colonial government created tenement housing, allocating 120 square feet to each unit, with a system of communal restrooms and wash areas. These were homes, but their architecture resembled prisons. Current subsidised housing rents at about 30 to 40% below market rate, but market rate is among the most expensive in the world. It takes an entire month's income for a family to pay for subsidised housing. They must live, pay school expenses for children, save for college, conduct their lives out of a second or third income. Grief over such catastrophes turns to anger, as it is for the working class around the globe. The social and economic conditions in Hong Kong are explosive, and outrage is coming to the surface. For these articles and more today, visit the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been John Davis.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.